You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
I'm fascinated by origin stories. I'm always interested to know how people got where they were and more importantly, where they are and how this whole thing kind of came about. And like going through your website and just looking at like your online profile and the community of people that you really focused on, which is feels like, and I don't want to discredit by calling it mommy fitness, but really like empowering women that have children to, you know, take hold of their fitness and become the best versions of themselves.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. I'm not offended at all with the mommy fitness because I think there's empowerment behind that. I will always say being a mom is the hardest job in the world. And a lot of the times we lose our own identity throughout that process. So I have a mission to help bring women back to their identity and honestly find like the strongest version of themselves.
Nice. So you're a mom yourself. You talked about, you know, two kids, little boys.
I have two little boys. They keep me on my toes, 5 and 3. And it's so much fun. So they're a blast.
What did your fitness journey look like before you had children? How did that all go?
So it's interesting because there really was not much fitness in the beginning. I was actually brought up in the arts. So I did a lot of like singing, dancing, acting. So I was in shape in that point of like, I was moving, right? But like, I never was part of a team sport. I would have never called myself like athletic. So I didn't start that journey until my late 20s. Throughout college, I lived a very unhealthy lifestyle. I drank a lot, didn't move my body. I think maybe I went into the gym like twice. Was a theater and arts major. And then after college, that's kind of when things took a turn. So my parents were marathon runners. So they were always in the athletic world. My brother was an athlete. My sister was an athlete. So I was kind of like the black sheep of the family in that sense. But after college, I just hit a point where I was like, okay, I don't feel good. I had gained 25 pounds in college just from not eating well, right? Not moving my body. Hormones were changing at that point. What was working in the past wasn't working anymore. And my parents kind of saw where I was at. And they were the ones that kind of put a voice in my ear of like, hey, you have an opportunity to really work on yourself. You're right up fresh out of college. You don't have a job yet. Like, let's focus on you. So they invited me to a CrossFit class. They did CrossFit at the time and went to one class. I felt like I felt that release of endorphins and was hooked. And that's when it really all started. I did some CrossFit for a little bit, started lifting weights, started running. And within a year, like lost the 25 pounds I had gained in college and truly like never felt better because I was really prioritizing nutrition. And then from there, it was just like so many doors opened in the athletic world. And it's funny because now I'm 35. I look back at the first part of my life, there was no fitness, right? There was no athletic background. So now I'm like, okay, how can I make up for all that lost time? What can I do next? Kind of a mentality.
Nice. Where did you train in CrossFit? What was the CrossFit gym?
So it was in Cool Springs, like Franklin area in Tennessee, Cool Springs CrossFit.
Yeah. What was your first workout?
Remember? I mean, I think we went straight into like barbell work, EMOMs. I can't remember the exact, but what I do remember is like, I thought I was going to die because it was so intense. It was like, how fast can you go? I definitely have a competitive mindset where I'm like, I want to win. And so I did not listen to my body well that first go around and like almost passed out. So I was like, all right, this is humbling. CrossFit's no joke.
Yeah. If time is the enemy, Grindstone is your weapon. It's the most flexible training program in the power athlete arsenal. Built for boardroom warriors, sleep deprived parents, students burning the candle, and athletes with their axe to the grindstone. Grindstone delivers high-impact strength training with minimal time demands. So when life gets chaotic, your progress doesn't fall apart. Consistent, efficient, built to keep you strong, lean, and resilient, no matter what's on your plate. Claim your 7-day free trial at powerathletehq.com/grindstone and take the fight to Father Time. I got invited to a CrossFit level one in roughly like 2008. I was still an active NFL
player. Oh, how'd that go?
Or 2007, 2008. I was still an active NFL player. I got invited. I went, had done metabolic conditioning and knew a lot what they were talking about, but had never done a CrossFit workout. So the first CrossFit workout I ever did was actually at the level one. And we did, it was like 10 minutes, minute on, minute off. I can't remember what the workout was, but I got smashed. Like it was after the season was over. So I hadn't been really training for, a couple weeks and, maybe a month I'd taken off. And I got smashed. And I remember.
It is humbling.
It is. And it was lightweight. And I'm like looking at these little dudes that like can't lift a ton, just actually smash. And the hilarious part was we go outside to get ready to work out and they're like, hey, we're going to warm up. We take off on a run. And mind you, I just thought it was a seminar. So I was wearing like basketball shoes and jeans and a t-shirt. All of a sudden, like I'm seeing these people like stripped down, like wearing like shorts, taking off their shirts, wearing running shoes. And they're like, okay, let's go warm up. And they take off running. And so I start running. We ran for easily 25 minutes to like a field in the middle of nowhere. And then next thing you know, I'm like dying. And then we did all of this like warm up, push up, air squat, calisthenics, and then ran back. And they're like, okay, let's work out. And I was like, I am going to get murdered. And ended up, I was living in Newport Beach. And so I would drive up to Athletes Performance, which is in Carson. If you know Southern California, it's roughly about 19 miles. But as the crow flies, but on a good day, it could take you 3 hours. On a bad day, it would, obviously more. So I would stop driving up to Carson every day and I'd go maybe a couple times a week and I started training at this CrossFit gym and did that. And then they ended up reaching out to me and I ended up competing in the CrossFit Games and they ended up making a movie about it. So there was a documentary called Every Second Counts. And
that's amazing. I need to watch it.
it's pretty rough. I think it was the second CrossFit Games. And then a week later, I went to go play for the Patriots and I got hurt in the last preseason game. And I always wonder if like doing the CrossFit Games contributed to that injury.
So that is, I feel like, a hot topic that over the years has been talked about because my mom personally got injured when she was doing CrossFit. So what are your thoughts about that? Like, do you think there's a correlation there?
I don't think CrossFit inherently injures people, right? Like the methodology. I do think that the application, it's kind of like, does chocolate cake make people overweight? If you eat a lot of it,
right.
If you and I have a slice of chocolate cake, it's not going to be detrimental to our life. Now, if you sit down and you eat a chocolate cake every single day. So I think that some of the application of CrossFit and how it's applied, and it was especially in those early days where people were just looking for the endorphin response and the beatdown and a little bit of Stockholm syndrome. I definitely think bringing people in that don't have a base level of conditioning and then throwing them into these intense things. I mean, when you get massive changes in volume and intensity, that's where you start seeing injuries. So I think the application, but I always think it's weird where people are like, oh, so-and-so hates CrossFit. I'm like, how can you hate working out and lifting weights and like getting a little metabolic conditioning? I just think the application gets a little fuzzy. And then also people feel really empowered and sometimes need somebody to put a governor in place. And maybe I think some of those injuries come from it, or, then you also put people in like a group setting where now all of a sudden there's 30 people doing something and you don't want to be the one person that's like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Completely agree with that. Yeah. I think there's definitely a level of like mind body connection with CrossFit. Like you got to be in tune with your body and there's so much more. I mean, I feel like a lot of these, I have some friends that are CrossFit athletes in the games and, there's so much recovery and fueling nutritionally that is paired with that, right? If you're not doing the other work, you're going to get injured, I feel like, with that sport.
Yeah, I mean, there's overtraining in every sport. So, and I think that the people that compete at the CrossFit Games, I mean, doing 5, 6, 7 workouts a day, I mean, training 3, 4 hours a day, which if you're an Olympic, we had the guy on who was a coach that was the, or is the Olympic sprint triathlon coach. And those guys are training anywhere, 6, 7 hours a day, 5, 6, 7 days a week. And it's the wild amount of volume that they build into, but they, they start and they periodize into it. And then they kind of like, once they hit this volume, they kind of stay and they monitor it. They use HRV and a bunch of other stuff to be able to monitor it. So I think the people that are competing at the CrossFit Games have like worked into it. The problem is you take people off the street who, let's say, run marathons or maybe weren't really fit and you throw them in that. I just think that they probably need to like find some self-governing on the front side a little bit, but it's great for community. I mean, and I think that's the biggest piece where people really lose, you know, I mean, and we see it today, you know, like if you go to a commercial gym, everybody's got their earbuds in, everybody's got headphones, nobody's interacting. Everybody's kind of siloed and just kind of moving about. Whereas you go into a CrossFit thing and the coach is talking to you, everybody's engaged, there's community, you don't show up. Next thing you know, you got people texting you, asking if you're okay. So I think that there's a community aspect that's very powerful.
Oh, that's a good point. I never actually thought about, but that's a good one.
Well, I mean, it's what you do. I mean, if you look at, you know, like your online community and what you're doing, you're building community, you're empowering people.
Yes. And that is one thing, like community. When I think of like how to describe my overall brand and a big component of it, it really is community, because especially this day and age with technology and, like you said, everybody having their earbuds in or on their phone, it's like we lose that connection that is at the end of the day why we're alive. Right? Moving, doing what we do every single day is to connect with others in some capacity. And so, community is everything.
Well, I mean, you know, if you, and I know this is kind of dark, but if you look at like suicidal rates for people, you know, I mean, the biggest, whenever they go back and try to figure out what this happens, the biggest one is like people don't have a brotherhood. They don't have a sisterhood. They don't have community. They don't have people. Mm-hmm. Like they're disconnected from either the church or, you know, let's say a CrossFit gym. But like if people have friends and family and people around them, they tend to have better outcomes. People that are very siloed. And like you said, in today's world where, you know, technology and you can do everything behind a computer, you don't have to leave your home. You can just order food in. I mean, it's very easy to kind of unplug and not have any social interactions. And the problem is we're social creatures. And without it, we lose that connection. And next thing you know, dark things happen.
Oh yeah, completely on the same page. And I feel like even too, just like when we are out in public, just that friendly, you know, hello, have a good day.
Yeah.
Little one-liners that I feel like used to be so much more of a thing.
Yeah.
It's like, we just look at people now and don't really have that. So I always try to give a nice little hello or have a good day to people, cause I think it can go a long way. You never know what somebody's going through.
Yeah. I always shoot to open doors for people. That's like a big one. If I can like open a door and like let people in, I always think that's like, thank you, you know? And on occasion you open a door and somebody walks right by and doesn't say anything. And you're kind of like, okay.
Okay.
All right. But I'm not going to stop doing it. How would you classify the women that follow your training? Are they kind of fit within the same model? Are they stuck moms that are just looking to be the best version of themselves? And do they fit kind of in a demographic, or is there just kind of like a central theme?
Yeah, no, I think I would say there is a mix of a lot of different types of women in my community, but the majority are the women that maybe were active in the first part of their life in their teens and 20s. And maybe a lot of them were athletes, right? Or maybe just did a lot of, you know, strength training, and then they have kids and they're having a hard time coming back for a lot of different factors, right? It could be now they're managing kids and a job, and it's like, how do you find that time? Or they just aren't strong like they used to be, and they're trying to figure out what kind of style of movement would work best for them given their new lifestyle as a mother. Or hormones. And hormones are a big thing that I think are not talked about enough, especially among females. Hormones change, especially in your 30s with kids, after kids, going through pregnancy, postpartum, a lot of things change. And what was working, I think, for a lot of women, myself included, in our later teens, 20s, late 20s even, it's not working anymore, right? So I think it's a lot of women just wanting to feel a connection and just have a nice, simple blueprint. It does not have to be complicated to help them feel empowered to get that strength back and get that rhythm back and find that identity.
So what does that philosophy look like? Is it lifting heavy weights? Is it a little conditioning, movement, just a little bit of everything?
So I think for me personally, I started with just simple strength training, dumbbells, right? And then a few years ago, I started incorporating the barbell. That's when I really saw my body composition change, is when I started utilizing the barbell, focusing more honestly on low impact, heavy lifting sessions to really grow that lean muscle mass and bringing in that accessory work and some endurance work, you know, HIIT workouts in between. But I used to be the Orange Theory fit class kind of a girl. I did not have much muscle mass. It wasn't until I started using the barbell, started lifting heavier dumbbells, that I was like, holy cow, this is actually working, right? That paired along with nutrition and my body composition is changing. So I do usually the barbell about 3 times a week. I do a lot of dumbbell work. Depending on what my training looks like, I'll throw in some, you know, cables, accessory work, things like that. But I mean, I think you can keep it simple. Barbell, dumbbells, and the sessions don't have to be long.
Yeah. High intensity. And when I think of intensity, CrossFit kind of messed up the definition of intensity. When I think of intensity, I think of percentage of 1 RM. CrossFit has a more of an emotional deal. Is it a hard sell to get women to lift heavy weights in the beginning?
It is. Because we hear of the fear of getting bulky, right? Because if you look back decades ago, when lifting became a thing, it was predominantly men and it was all about heavy lifting and you get jacked that way. And it's honestly kind of the same philosophy of creatine that I feel like we're dealing with right now. It's that fear of being bulky, right? Lifting, creatine, all these things that make sense because we associate that with male, the male figure, men, because they were the ones that started that. I get that fear, but I always tell women in my community, it's really hard to get bulky. It's very hard. You're going to have to be doing a lot of other things alongside.
I've spent an entire life trying to be as bulky as possible. And and it's funny because when people say that, I'm like, do you realize there's people that have spent their 30, 40 years trying to be as bulky as possible and fail at it miserably? And then I always love when women are like, oh my God, I look at a barbell and I put on muscle and I'm like, where has this been my whole life? I'm like, that's my favorite one when working with ladies. And I'm like, man, if it's that easy, show me. Just show me exactly how I touch a barbell and get put on muscle.
Yeah, you're like, let me know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll bottle and sell that. We'll make an incredible supplement company out of it. obviously you talked a little bit about nutrition. How does nutrition play into that as well?
I mean, that's the first step. I have a lot of women saying, hey, what exercises can I do to target my abs? Or I'm trying to make my, you know, glutes a little bit more rounded. How can I make more definition here, there, whatever that may be? It's like, let's not even talk about what exercises you're going to do. Let's start with nutrition. Because if your nutrition is not dialed in, right, guess what? All that lifting is not going to do much. It's when you compare the two together, but really start with nutrition. So with nutrition, you keep it simple. I mean, that's honestly, if I think about like my guide or my blueprints, it's like stick to whole foods, right? Cut out the processed stuff. Cut out, especially the liquids, right? Like the sugary drinks that we drink, that those are all like hidden calories that you don't think about that can really add up and cause a lot of inflammation as well. But if we could just keep it simple with whole foods, cut the processed foods out, and I'm a big component of tracking macros. I think it's something that is a powerful tool in our toolkit. You don't have to do it long-term. Heck, you can just do it for a month, but it allows you to really see the big picture of what you're putting in your body from a number standpoint and how that converts over into specific results that you see, but also feel.
Yeah. I think, and having done this for years, I do track my macros. I am constantly amazed where I'll eat something and be like, man, I did not see that one coming. So what I do is, for my meal prep, I do like ground beef and rice. And so I'll have a container in this. And if it's like 80% versus 93, like the fat content,
you can tell a difference.
Well, I mean, just in the macros, like if it's 80-20 just versus 93-7, like I can eat.
The fat adds up.
Oh yeah. And then all of a sudden it just kills it. And then I got to eat like chicken or fish later in the day. Whereas if I like get the 93, and so just even like just making the right selection at the grocery store has a massive impact, you know? And then
and something else some women don't think about, or men too, is what we cook in, right? Like for cooking butter, for cooking in olive oil, it's like, those are all fats, which I say, like, if you are overeating, and you know you're in a caloric surplus and you're wanting to bring that down, start with your fats, right? Because we know that that's a higher calorie count per gram. So if you can bring those down, think about what you're cooking your food in. Because if you're just putting a few tablespoons of olive oil or butter, like that's going to add up very quickly.
Oh, yeah. And then The fascinating thing too, and you know, we've done this for years. I mean, we just got done doing some challenges with some of the guys I train for JITS, because they're all getting ready for World Masters, which is next week. Mm-hmm. So a bunch of them had to cut weight. So we did a weight cut, and I cut 20 pounds. And just basically eating in caloric restriction for the last 12 weeks. Super bummer. It is no fun being under your calories and stepping on the scale and being like, yep, I'm in caloric restriction, or then, you know, overeat a little bit and then having to do some aerobic work and trying to track all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, everybody got in pretty good shape and the body composition improved. And it's pretty interesting to see, even though you're hungry, that everybody I just saw one of my training partners this morning, and dude, he looks great. He's, you know, he's at his target weight. He's ready to go. And he's like, man, I am looking forward to eating. But he goes, honestly, we went to the pool party yesterday. I took off my shirt and everybody was like, you know, eyeing me. And he's like, dude, this, where did this come from? And I'm like, dude, you put the work in. And it's nice to get a little bit of rewards.
It's a very powerful tool. Yes. And so let me ask you, do you track your macros all the time, or is it just something you bring out periodically?
I do. If we're trying to really dial it in, I go pretty full tilt. But for the most part, I just kind of track loosely most of the time. I tend to overeat on protein, which I know isn't necessarily a problem, but you know, some of the protein refeeding studies, it doesn't necessarily, overeating protein isn't going to put on more muscle. It's somewhere around that 0.8 to a gram, but it's also satiating.
I think for you too, as an athlete, it's making sure you're getting enough carbs in, which I feel like is a whole nother topic of discussion among women, the fear of carbs.
That's another one. I don't fear the carb. It just makes I think the problem is carbs aren't created equal. I tell people, I'm like, dude, if you want to lean out, get away from what I call dry, crunchy carbs. Anything that's dry, in a chip bag, or anything that's dry and crunchy, don't eat those.
Stay away.
Yeah. So for me, it's I like white rice. So I'll do white rice once or twice a day, and maybe some cream of rice and different things, and try to mix up those carb sources. But you sit down and there's nobody that has one chip. I don't even go, if we're dieting, I don't go get Mexican food. Because if they put that chip down, I'm going to eat one and just crush the basket. And then you're like, dude,
you can't just have one. It's hard. No. Yeah. I completely get that.
Next thing you know, you've had seven tortillas and blew your diet.
I know. I saw that meme on Instagram. It was think about one chip is 1/4 of a tortilla. That'll really blow your mind.
You know what? I saw that and I actually cut tortillas up into quarters and kind of measured them. It's not a 1-for-1 because I was kind of curious. I'm like, so would 4 tortilla chips be 1 tortilla? And I'm like, no, it's not. It's more like 8. It's about a quarter, but
That's better.
Yeah. But I mean, how many are in a basket? If you sit down, there's probably 30 or 40.
For sure.
You know, so you're having 3 or 4 tortillas, but, the diet piece is so, so impactful. How do you tackle that with carbs with your ladies? Because anytime I have a carb discussion with women, all of a sudden they want to pull out a steak and drive a stake in my heart like I'm a vampire.
Well, I want to preface this by saying that I feel like where I'm at my journey, I have not always been, right? I used to be afraid of eating, underfueling, did not hit my protein, did not eat carbs because I villainized them completely. And it was when I really obviously went to nutrition school and started really diving into the science behind what these macronutrients are doing to our bodies, depending on where we're at with level of activity, how it can make or break us. And so first and foremost, when it comes to the nutrition, I think protein is a very important piece, especially for women when it comes to building lean muscle mass and hormones, right? I always say, hey, 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight is a great place to start. Doesn't matter where your activity level it is, just that should be your goal. Now, when it comes to carbs, we got to stop villainizing them. We need them to fuel, right? It's that is what we know replenishes those glycogen stores. So even if we're just strength training a few times a week, even if we're just going on walks, it's if we want to keep building that lean muscle mass, keep our muscle going, right? Really have the energy behind our workouts to fuel us, we got to be eating some carbs. Doesn't mean you have to eat a ton, but you need something. I tell a lot of my women that are just, I would say maybe average, moderate exercise to really focus their carbs before and after their highest level of activity a day, and to not be afraid. So I think I always tell my women too that like, give it 2 weeks of doing this and you should feel the difference, right? Keep doing it and those aesthetics will follow. With my athletes, I tell them, if you want your performance to be better, you got to eat the carbs alongside and you'll feel it. I mean, myself, just talking personally, like I remember the days when I was eating maybe 25 grams of carbs, 30 grams of carbs a day. And like, I would even get my head about doing that, right? When I was years ago, afraid of it. And it's like through the schooling, through just the act of trying it out myself and where I'm at now, it's like, gosh, I wish I could go back and tell the old self, like, just eat it. It's going to be okay. It's going to make you perform better, feel better, look better, all the things.
Do you have to navigate things like the carnivore diet and some of these more extreme kind of diet approaches? Like I always thought about the carnivore diet for men. And then it was actually, mm-hmm. you know, through the work I do at SI for the everyday athlete, you know, started looking, we had Sean Baker on the podcast, who's kind of the guy that started the kind of the carnivore trend. And so I always kind of equated it more towards men, but actually going back and looking that it's really taken hold for a lot of ladies as well.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I think that we're all bio-individual. So what works for one person might not work for the other. With that being said, I think that if there was a perfect diet, we would be doing it, right? So it's not going to work for everyone. But I will say, I have seen the carnivore diet transform many lives around me, my brother included. I know he's obviously not a female, we're talking about females, but he has psoriasis. And when he started the carnivore diet, it all went away.
Wow.
So little things like that, I think that women that especially deal with like autoimmune or have a lot of sensitivities, the carnivore diet I think is a great option to try, and I've seen a lot of success. For me, I think that I have a pretty sensitive gut. I actually respond better to eating more carnivore style. I would maybe say Mediterranean in a sense too. Now with my training, I really do try to do the carb load as well. But for me, a lot of dairy is not the best, but I find that when I'm prioritizing like good quality dairy, when it comes to butter, avocado, or the healthy fats as well, avocado, olive oil, those lean meats, like my body responds really good to it.
Do you do any raw dairy?
I do.
Nice.
Which is funny because I used to be like, oh my goodness, that's crazy, right? Raw dairy, all the things. And then I started trying it and it's like any sensitivity that I had to dairy that you would buy on the shelf, did not experience that with the raw.
I am 100% in agreement. For me, I won't even drink. I like raw cheese and raw milk, and like drinking normal milk just tastes strange to me now. And we've been drinking, yeah, it just doesn't taste right. Like something's off. We had a lady on the podcast, Dr. Sabine Hazen, who has a company called Progenibiome, and she's the one that does all the research on the gut. It's like her lab is the one that kind of, you know, quantifies everything. So she's done research where she's reversed autism. Worked with like thousands of autistic kids and actually reversed autism through basically the gut, Parkinson's. So we had her on the podcast a little bit and she ended up doing my stuff. And one of her recommendations is like once a week, I want you to drink raw milk. And I'm like, oh, I love raw milk. It's just kind of a pain in the ass to get here. It's actually easier to go buy guns than it is to buy raw milk here in Texas. You have to like get online.
Which is wild.
So you get online, you pay for it, and then you have to like go to some obscure farmer's market, which I do enjoy going to, but then you have to pick it up. You can't buy it there. They can't take money. It's just, so it's a bit of a laborious process, but it's worth doing. And it tastes great. But yeah, that was one of her recommendations for me was like once a week, I want you to have like 20 ounces of raw milk. So
do you feel a difference?
I've never had gut issues. So I've been very, very lucky. So when she tested my gut, I want to say my diversity score was in the eights, which basically makes me like a low level hunter gatherer, or like a Midwest farmer. So most people in this country are like in the threes and the fours. And then also I had pretty decent amount of bifidobacteria, which less, I think less than 2% of the population has. And then also I had
lactobacillus. Oh, that's wonderful.
So yeah, so lactobacillus was another one, which is actually, you know, in, you know, sourdough and sauerkraut and fermented foods. Yep. That actually reduces inflammation. So people that have rheumatoid arthritis and a mass amounts of inflammation usually know lactobacillus. So I've always liked sauerkraut and I do like sourdough bread, even though it's super trendy.
Do the same thing.
And so that lactobacillus actually increases recovery and probably why I don't have the same body aches that a lot of people have. But I never got COVID. And even though I was exposed hundreds of times, like, and when she tested my stool.
What blood type are you?
I think I'm a B positive.
Okay.
I think I'm a B positive. I'd have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure I'm B. But I never got COVID. And then when she looked at my gut and she did our stool samples, I never had any, there was no signature of COVID anywhere in it. And when she looked at my stuff,
she's like,
you, I can tell you why you never got COVID. You have bifidobacteria, you got good diversity in lactobacillus. So, she's like, basically based upon that, she's like, very few people in this population fit within that. So I've been pretty lucky, but she did make an interesting point to me where she said, usually very, very pretty women have terrible guts. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, for some reason, like when all the pretty girls that I've tested usually have some form of gut irritation, some gut issues.
That's wild. Well, I feel like I definitely have all the gut issues. And
so does my wife.
Something that I've, and I, yes, I mean, it's one of those things too, where I know what my body needs now. It's just, you know, even me having gone to school and being a coach, it's like, we're human, we're not perfect. And sometimes it's hard with travel and things like that. But I'm exploring with different like peptides and things like that to see what I can do to help my gut. Probiotic though, like prebiotic, probiotic is huge. I mean, that's something that I take every single day. For me, I can't have any cane sugar. Mm. I can't have any seed oils. I know that that wrecks my gut. And it's interesting because my boyfriend, he's an athlete as well, but he has like a steel gut. He could eat like a sleeve of Oreos every day and be totally fine.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, like I'm like envious and jealous because it's like he doesn't have to deal with those issues. But, you know, that's okay. And you just got to do what's best for your body. So at least I kind of like know what to do now. It's just, you know, it's easier said than done sometimes.
You know, one of the, you know, my wife, because we had twins and the babies were breech. So my wife had C-section. And one of the problems is when they do C-sections and they cut into you, that destroys like the gut bacteria, the gut biome.
Yes.
So I wonder, and if some of my, or I'm pretty sure that a lot of my wife's gut issues stemmed from that. And that was a funny observation that Dr. Sabine said. She's like, you know, for the most part, it's usually always the pretty women have some gut issues. And
is so funny.
Yeah. So
I wonder what the science is behind that.
I don't know. I mean, but if you think about it, everything in affects the microbiome. And I think the thing is, when we think about it, we think about just the food we eat, but it's actually more than that. It's the soil we're around because there's microbes in the soil. So if you're not actually getting out into nature and getting your hands dirty and you think about hand sanitizer, and especially with kids, you're trying to keep them so clean. So letting them be a little dirty. And then the other one is actually the people you're around. So when I got my gut tested, I had three kind of interesting gut bacteria that I shouldn't have had that were positive. One was I had Dr. Sabine's from Morocco, like North Africa. And she showed me, she's like, hey, here's a certain strain of bacteria that's unique to people that are from this part of the world. That's how I know where I'm from. And so she went through and she's like, how do you have this? Do you have any family? I'm like, no, my grandparents are from Denmark. I grew up in California. I don't have anything that looks like, you know, North Africa, but I do jujitsu with a bunch of guys that are from the Middle East. And then I also have two strains of bacteria from the Amazon. The guy that I train with, Sean Giabero, and those guys are from Manaus and they're from the Amazon. So what happens is that if there's positive gut bacteria and bad bacteria, if your body is extremely resilient and the gut's resilient, you can actually take these on if you're in close proximity. So it's actually the circle of people you're around, the food you eat, and the soil and everything you're around. So it's actually threefold.
So I just need to come visit and train with you guys then and hopefully get some of the bacteria.
Well, I was going to say, you're doing right, like putting your little boys in jiu-jitsu.
You're check, you're cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
And now, you know, now they're around that type of stuff. So I think, and then, you know, obviously, you know, you're in close contact with them, and it's just, you know, I also wonder too, if part of the microbiome issues for women is stress. Like, because men don't stress nearly as much, you know, I mean, but if you think about it from an evolutionary standpoint, like women by function, if you want to define, I mean, I know that there's a lot of stuff in the news and media that define women, but I mean, I still think about women as, you know, the ability to have children as the fundamental difference within women. I mean, you know, different chromosomes too, but that idea of like having to create another human and then take care of that human. I think that there's a stress relationship to that where, like, you know, women naturally have way better stress. You know, like, I'm sure men come home and be like, well, what'd you think of my business partner? She's like, I don't like him. You know, like there's like women have are way more intuitive and they trust their guts more. And I think maybe that stress is one of the contributing factors to it.
I think I completely agree with that. I think going back on the gut with women too, and just any individual, I think we also have to look at our mothers. I think there's a huge part of our gut microbiome that comes from that, like coming out of our own mothers, like what their state of health looked like, what their gut microbiome looks like. So I think that's a huge factor. I think when it comes to the stress, we know that stress is inflammation, and inflammation is the biggest driver when it comes to disease in our bodies, and especially in the gut. It starts in the gut. And so I think looking at my own life the past few years, kind of like the places of events that have taken place, I definitely found a lot more inflammation from stress. And I've had to learn how to manage that because it is not easy. And a lot of women I work with and just talk to experience the same thing.
So how do you manage it? Especially working with like clients and helping them manage stress. Like what are the levers that you pull?
So it's the simple things that sound simple that are hard to do at the end of the day. You got to fuel properly. And I know we touched on nutrition earlier. I want to bring something back up because I think this is a huge piece that a lot of women struggle with. We have the fear of overeating, right? And I think men are completely different in this way and our bodies respond completely different. A lot of women undereat. And when you're not giving your body enough calories, your body's going to go into that starvation mode and it's going to store everything that comes in. It's going to slow your metabolism. I mean, it's looking at your body in a state of distress and a survival zone, quite literally. And so that alone is causing a lot of inflammation and stress on your body. So I think fueling well nutritionally is a huge part, eating enough that your body needs to be able to properly function and for your organs to properly function. I think the second part is sleep. And honestly, I would say that comes first, to be quite honest. I think that sleep, it sounds like, okay, yeah, we need sleep, but it's like, we really need sleep. For me, I thrive on a 7 to 8 hour window, but I think 7 at the minimum. For especially women. And then you got to look at your cycles. Depending on where you're at in your cycle, you're going to need more sleep. So you got to start to be intuitive with your body in that sense. And then recovery. I think that we are not always, especially as moms too, spending the time for recovery, whether that's mobility or, you know, looking more for low impact recovery sessions, whether that's just walking or swimming or whatever that may be, but just like taking those rest days is super important. And then I think we know from science is lifting. It's going to boost metabolism. It's going to create a stronger body overall. So it's like, you can stick to those four things. Again, sounds simple. Whoops, hold on a second.
That's all right.
My headphone popped out.
I know, you got excited. You got like a hand gesture.
So excited.
I know.
I know, my ears though are like a little small for these, or big for these. It sounds simple. It's easier said than done, for sure. But I think if we can focus on those four things, the way we feel is going to be greater, and the way we perform will be greater.
So how do you manage performance, like, you know, through your community? Do you use, you know, obviously tracking? Are there challenges? Like, how do you go and make sure that each person is progressing the way they need to?
Yeah, so I have two different parts when it comes to my brand. I have my fitness app Empower, and I put out one-off programs, one-off workouts. So it's kind of a free-for-all of what women can do. We do have challenges every couple months as well, and new programs that are always coming out. But a huge part of that, like we said earlier, is a community. So we have the community chat. Women are always, you know, working with other women, spreading motivation and inspiration amongst each other, which is amazing. But it's also me there weekly, giving tips, giving advice, giving the tools to help them use alongside these workouts, whether that's macro calculator, macro guide, macro counts, right? Maybe they want a more specific approach. And then another reason why I started my podcast, because I feel like there's so much to this space that needs to be talked about. So it's like they have that as well. But then I have my one-on-one coaching with my clients that I only take a few a month. And that's where you really get that one-on-one work, and we can really make it individualized and specific based to their goals. And I enjoy it so much because I think sometimes we get so focused on us, right? Us as individuals, ourselves, and what works for us. And so it's really humbling just to work with other women that are going through different stages of life. And, or maybe it's a stage that I was in years ago, and it's like being able to give them tools and see that progress grow is super cool. Here's one thing though, I think that you can have all the tools, and I know that you know this, you can have all the tools, have the programs, have the meal prep ready to go. But there's one thing that if you're missing, you will never see or feel the results. And that's accountability. Mm. You got to have the accountability to yourself, to others around you. And that's why I think working with a coach or being part of a group of coaching of somehow can be super helpful, especially for women in the beginning stages of coming back and trying to find that. Mm.
How do you kind of carve that out for ladies? Like one of the interesting things my wife talks to me about this is kind of convincing women that they don't have to do everything, that it's okay to carve these times out for themselves. That, like, you know, women are like, oh, I have to do this and this, and I got so many responsibilities, but like empowering them to like, you need to take care of yourself. Like you need to carve this out. Like, how do you like empower them to make the time to take care of themselves?
So I feel that so much with my heart, because when I first had my first son, I was there, right? I had let myself go. I was drowning quite literally because I wasn't fueling myself. You know, when they say on an airplane, like you want to put your mask on yourself, the oxygen mask, before the kids around you or your children. It sounds kind of crazy, but if you look at it, it's like, well, if you're not fueling yourself well, if you're not taking care of yourself, how are you expected to take care of somebody else, right? Sure. So if your oxygen goes out, you can't place it on your child. It's really the same concept when it comes to the health that we should be giving ourselves and respecting ourselves every single day. If we're not fueled and we don't intentionally give our bodies what we need, how can we be the best version of ourselves, the best mother, the best wife, the best friend? And so for me, through trial and error and really saying, okay, I'm going to make this a lifestyle, I've seen the doors that it's opened. I've seen my heart grow. I've seen what it can do for my children as far as like being an inspiration to them as well. So you kind of have to look at it from that. But truly, I think that when we fuel ourselves well and we carve out, it doesn't have to be long, but like 20 minutes a day, let's start at that, of just movement. And your kids can be right there. You don't have to like ship them off somewhere. They can be in the room with you. Bring out some dumbbells, get moving. And guess what? They're going to see a mom who is working on themselves.
Yeah.
And they're going to grow up seeing that and implement them that same lifestyle for them. So easier said than done, but I think it's something that we as women have to prioritize.
So how, like, when you get into that conversation, is it, cause we talked about nutrition really being the foundation.
Yeah.
So, and then obviously lifting weights and, you know, being able to build an aerobic base, and you can kind of like stack all these pieces. Would you say that really that first piece is like, hey, let's discuss the nutrition, make sure that you're eating enough. And then once you make sure that we're fueling and we're doing the things that we need to, now we kind of progress into maybe like lifting some dumbbells and maybe some barbells at one point, you know, getting out for a walk and recovery. And it looks like this holistic program, but really the first stop on the bus or first stop at the train station is that nutrition piece.
It is. And I think it can feel very overwhelming because I think we automatically go to like meal prep, which I'm a huge advocate for. But
well, it's because
you can probably agree.
Yeah. Like if you don't have something to eat, you will make terrible decisions. That's why I like on Sundays, I meal prep for like the week and like I don't do everything, but I make sure that like if I'm like I got home from JITS and had to get some stuff done before this. And so like, you know, the ground beef and rice that I had, that's like a big one with an apple. And then, you know, making sure that like there's something where you come in and you're not like in this frantic hunter gatherer where you're like, I'm gonna eat a little of this and this. And then you're like, oh shit, I fucked everything up.
Absolutely. And then you feel overwhelmed. And then guess what? You quit, right? Yeah. You're like, okay, I'm done with this because it's not working. And I found myself there so many times in the past. So it's like, you got to keep it simple. And I tell my clients, like, because they're on Instagram too, they're on social media, they see these extravagant meal preps. And I'm like, guys, it does not have to be like that. So I have this rule, it's called the 3-2 rule, where you have three groups of food. So a protein, complex carb, and then a veggie. And then you prep two of each. So it could take literally an hour to 2 hours max on the weekend. That's all you got to dedicate. You can make chicken and ground beef, right? Meal prep that on a skillet. You can make rice and sweet potatoes, and then you could do two veggies, mixed veggies, whatever you want. You meal prep that, and it's like, there you go. Depending on the amount of people, you can double the servings, but you have at least a meal prep for 3 to 4 days, right? And I think that, again, we can keep it simple on our plate. Like, we don't have to have these extravagant meals. Like, my meals, which honestly I eat, I'm sure you said the same thing actually earlier, like, ground turkey, rice, and broccoli. Like, I eat that daily because I know that I'm going to stay consistent with it and it's going to fuel me well. And I don't need anything else. Like, sometimes the most simple plans are going to be the most consistent.
Yeah. Well, the one, like, the best plan is the one that is simply executed with like the greatest efficiency, I think is the way that the saying goes. And I think if like you give people the skills to develop a plan and you empower them to do it, like, hey, do this and this, then they're never really at a, you know, at a, like an impasse where now they make a bad decision.
And something I tell my women too, is like, I have with my one-on-one coaching, I have like 6 or 8 week programs, but I always tell them in the beginning, like, hey, 6 to 8 weeks is honestly a short amount of time, right? To see huge, crazy changes. But here's our goal with working together is that we start working today and utilize tools to put in your toolkit to where at the end of these 6 to 8 weeks, hopefully you'll be able to feel different a little bit, right? Maybe you'll start seeing some changes, but guess what? You're going to be building is a lifestyle, right? So you can do away with the fad diets, the trends, the little things that so many of us, especially as women, fall off. It's like, we want this to be a lifestyle, not a diet, right? So to your point, it's like, you can keep it simple. And then when you get the nutrition dialed in, you know, start with 2 days a week of movement. If you're not moving at all, 2 strength training days. Ideally, I would love for my clients to get up to around 4 or 5 lifting days, but start at 2. Cause if you go too high, too early on, you're going to fall off, right? Sure. So start small and build up.
How do you balance like the physical side with the emotional? You know, as a guy, we tend to like, if I feel good and I'm training good, I tend to like the emotional side kind of fixes itself. Mm. Whereas I think women are a little bit different. And like I said, like, you know, coming from the NFL and growing up with brothers, realistically, now that I have daughters, I think about this constantly, where I'm like, hey, if you're training and you feel good and you know, your performance is good, like that should fix a lot of like any emotional or any kind of body issues or anything you have. Mm. But I've come to the realization that I think sometimes how women feel manifest. And so, whereas I think like it's a kind of a reverse, like if guys get in shape, like all of a sudden they're a better version, whereas women feel good about themselves and then get in shape. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
I might argue with you on that one, because looking at my own transformation the past few years specifically, so 2 years ago when I ran my first marathon, I was 12 pounds lighter. And I mean, I looked good, right? But I was very lean to the point where I lost my period for a year. Mm-hmm. So even though I was super lean, shredded, like full on 8-pack, like you could see all of my muscles, not a ton of muscle, right? But like I was shredded. I wasn't healthy on the inside. But for me at that point, it was like the aesthetics were awesome. It's like over the past couple of years, I've learned even more about nutrition and how to fuel properly as an athlete, which obviously I was not growing up. So it's like I've had to learn as I go. And now I have more muscle mass than I ever have. My body fat is slightly higher, but nothing crazy. Like I'm still in the teens. My period cycles are normal, but I feel stronger and sexier than ever because I feel so much better and I feel so much stronger. And it's like the weight that I can lift now versus a couple of years ago is crazy. And it's like I'm healthy on the inside too, which is really, really awesome. So again, it was a journey. It took some time to get here to realize that, but aesthetics aren't everything. And this is what I tell women, that if you eat to fuel yourself, to be in a strongest state, and you lift and move your body to fuel itself and be in the strongest state, the aesthetics will follow. But you have to trust your body.
I mean, it makes sense. If you're, you know, cause I mean, if you think about like, let's say bodybuilding, for example, you know, guys are in really good shape. You see Instagram, but then I'm sure if you look at their blood work, the amount of drugs they're taking is insane. So, I mean, how healthy are they really? But yet, you know, they're super lean and, you know, I'm able to walk around 6-7% body fat, which I've actually just read an interesting one on Sports Illustrated that talked about men that consistently are under 10% have like, don't get erections, have terrible testosterone, have to do this. So a lot of the guys that are walking around, that are walking around consistently sub 10% body fat have some definite hormonal issues. So, I mean, it's just, you know, somewhere around that, you know, let's say 9, 10, 11 is ideal. But, you know, if you're consistently living in 6 or 7%, just the outcomes are not nearly as good.
And same with women. Like, I think that like that threshold body fat wise, where it starts really messing up with your cycles is like, once you kind of cross over that 13%. So it's like, I know that I will never allow myself to get below that unless like, obviously it was for a bodybuilding show, which I don't think I would ever do. But I think I'm like just not interested in that. The people that can do that, it's amazing. I think when it comes to the discipline,
It's a strange culture though. Have you ever been to a bodybuilding show?
I have not. I have friends who have done it and I've seen pictures and it's like pretty crazy. Have you done one before?
No, I've not done a bodybuilding show. But we went to the Mr. Olympia and some of the shows. So we did some interviews. I think it was Dan Solomon and some of the Mr. Olympia people. So they invited us to come out and I got to go to the Mr. Olympia and we went a couple of times. It's a strange culture, especially like if you get into like the wellness and the fitness and for the girls, like seeing like I just have never seen people morph their bodies that way, you know, especially like the fitness. I mean, these girls have like these little tiny waists and these like huge butts and these big quads and to like the point where they almost look like, centaurs. Like they look like half horse, half human.
Absolutely.
There was,
which is amazing that you can get your body to that point, like just shows, but it's not sustainable.
Well, what was her name? I think she's from Puerto Rico, Yarnisha, I think is what was her name. Okay. There were thousands of people that were wearing these like airbrush t-shirts of her on there. And like the Puerto Rican people were going crazy. And so we're like seeing these shirts and I'm like, who is this? And then we see her and she's like, I don't think I've ever, I mean, I'm sure like on Instagram that like they call her the glute queen or whatever. But like when she walked up, she's short, like pint size, like really little, like five, I don't know how tall you are, but she was probably 5'1", 5 feet, like just.
Like, tiny.
Like fun size, you know, like they, you know, at Halloween, they have like the big candies and the little ones. She was tiny, but wearing these like massive heels and she came walking up and I was like, I don't think like I could have like cartoon draw, like would have ever imagined like how she would, like, it was crazy. Her waist was like this little big, had like huge, like glutes, massive quad. I mean, insanity. And like the straightest, perfect black hair I'd ever seen, like makeup done. And I was like, man, this is, and then we saw all of the wellness girls walk up and I was like, it looked like something, you know, like growing up in the 80s, they had like the He-Man cartoons and, you know, these kind of like different, you know, like G.I. Joe stuff. It looked like somebody drew these girls. Like it has to be a mix of like training, drugs, genetics, dieting. I mean, there's a whole thing to get them ready for this.
Technique and art to it, right?
Oh yeah. It was, it's fascinating to see what people can morph into their bodies. And then we saw them go out and I was like, holy shit, this is crazy. And then we saw the male open competitors for bodybuilding. And they're all fun sized. I mean, so I'm like just a hair under 6'6". I used to be 6'6". I think I shrunk a little. All the years in the NFL, you know, beating people in my head. So I think I'm like 6'5¾". But I like looked around and I like looked down and these dudes were like, looked like Ram Man from He-Man. But like these guys were just massive. And like to the point where like they kind of waddled when they walked. And I was like, dude, this is it. It was,
it's another world.
It is another world, but the competitors and the athletes are one thing. Like they're up on stage, yeah. They're, you know, morphing their bodies to try to like, you know, meet this standard. Like the people in the stands were so invested and just obsessed with like these individuals and their heroes and this. And like I said, there were thousands of people wearing these like hand airbrush shirts of Yurinisha. So I think what was, I guess I can say this from my ivory tower, as an NFL player, like you don't necessarily realize the fervor of the NFL and the fans until you like step away from it or you meet people. I mean, but just to see like how people are obsessed with NFL football, there's people that are obsessed with bodybuilding and they're obsessed with these girls and this, and they travel and they see them take pictures. And this is part of their identity. I was absolutely blown away. It's something to see. Everybody should go, but it definitely was.
I've always wanted to, and I have some friends in this space, so I need to just go to a show. But I mean, I honestly applaud them for the discipline because I feel like it takes so much discipline to get to your body to that point. So I'm sure they learned so much about themselves too throughout that process. But it's a wild world out there.
Yeah, I mean, just the, you know, we had Jay Cutler on the podcast. And just like his singular desire to lift 4 sets of 10 every single day. And like, you know, it just like this, like I appreciated the, what you could say, like the single-minded, like almost psychotic nature of like what they were trying to do and to morph their bodies. But it definitely was an interesting thing to go to. I was like, holy shit, this is wild. Like, I just couldn't believe it. They're like I saw these shirts and I'm like, who is this person? Everybody's wearing these shirts. And then we saw her and I was like, right. Oh, I get it. And like these people had traveled from everywhere. So it's definitely an interesting subculture. Cause I, you know, as a kid, you know, when I first started lifting weights, there was like Flex Magazine, Muscle and Fitness and, you know, Pumping Iron. And so you kind of saw the bodybuilding thing. And then when I was in high school, we would drive down and go to the Venice Golds that we had, you know, obviously seen in the magazines. So we got to see some pro bodybuilders and see those guys. But like for me, you know, we were interested in putting on muscle to be better at football, whereas these guys kind of got to the point where they were kind of not useless, but like they morphed their bodies in such a way that they were not able to really accomplish normal things like getting out of a car, probably taking a walk without their legs rubbing together and them setting on fire. They definitely perfected the art of being able to carry a lot of muscle in relation to body fat, which as a, you know, football player, you know, everybody wants to be in good shape. And if you want to get bigger, it's, you know, putting on muscle is more beneficial than putting on a bunch of fat.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wonder too, though, I think being so in tune holistically from a like metabolic standpoint, hormonal standpoint, like these bodybuilders, are they getting the support and the like education that they need to like make sure that their bodies are in an optimal state from the inside as well? You know,
I would say that the amount of drugs that they probably take to be able to do it, you know, that's why a lot of these guys kind of perish pretty young, which is a sad deal. But I mean, that sport, I mean, that sport's predicated on it. I mean, for a long time, I'm not overly interested. Like I know certain people are obsessed with like, you know, talking about the drug aspect. But the, like, it's just kind of, you know, like in football, like you're going to take hits to the head. That's what they do for their sport. So it's just part of the deal, but definitely the subculture and the fans were interesting to see.
And I had no idea that was a thing. So I'm going to go like the glute girl you talked about. I'm like, gotta look her up.
Yeah. Look, it's Yurinisha. I think I'm going to mess that one up. Okay. It begins with Y, but, when women get into your stuff, like, and you know, they get these transformations and they kind of balance into it. Like, what's the culmination of that? Is there, is it meeting you? Like they come train? Like, I just wonder if like, you know, like they get to the end of their journey, they've met their goals. Like what's next? Do they just continue or is there something that kind of takes it on for a little bit farther?
Yeah. So I think when it comes to the one-on-one coaching, like I said earlier, it's like about implementing that lifestyle. You know, and so something that I like to do with a lot of my clients is teach them how to program from that point on. And because I hate the idea of being like, okay, here's your program. You're going to do this for 8 weeks. We're going to work together. Like, good luck, you know, go find the next. So I kind of teach women how to build out their own progressive overload in a sense, and maybe what that looks like throughout our time working together. Because all of my clients, and honestly, pretty much every program I have in my app is progressive overload structure. That's what's really transformed my body comp. And honestly, I feel like there obviously it can be hard because you're really working on building the intensity and the sets and weights and all that. But it's kind of nice being able to do a lot of the same exercises week to week. You're not learning a ton of new things. Like, you're keeping it simple, mastering technique and form. So a lot of my clients like it for that. But I try to set them up for success when it's like, okay, you know how to track your macros now. This is what your body seems to respond best to. Here are some other tools around the nutrition side. When it comes to movement, like, here's what we've been doing. Here's how you can build out your own progressive overload in the future. And, you know, here are your goals, right? Maybe you want to work your back more, build more strength and muscles in your back, or maybe you want to work on your endurance as a runner. Like, these are what I would suggest to you to implement, you know, over the next few months. So I try to give them something that they can work off of after we meet and you know, stop working together in a sense. But in the app specifically, that's why I like coming out with like 2.0s. A lot of women resonate to specific programs, and I try to listen to that. That's why community is such a big thing. But it's like, what are they responding to? What do they like the best? And then it's about like just building more programs that resonate with my girls.
Nice. Is there like a certain success story that, like, when you come on podcasts and people ask you, like, is there one that kind of sticks out in your mind, like somebody that you brought on? And I don't know, I'm just always, like I said, we talk about origin stories. And I think for what we do, like, there's, you know, like the programs we write and the athletes we train, there's always an archetype. And there's a certain person that it was originally designed for. I wonder if there's any, you know, singular success story that you kind of lean on, or, you know, at your TED Talk you discuss.
Yeah, honestly, I hate to be, this sounds like probably crazy to be like myself, but I think it was my own personal story that I saw what proper nutrition and movement can do from a healing standpoint and how it changed my life incredibly. And I think that's something that pulls a lot of clients and just followers, I think, to my page, is how I also bring like a real life approach to it. Like, I've talked about my divorce. I talk about my eating disorder that I struggled with in the past. I talk about those real life things that I still struggle with every single day, but learn how to overcome those things through healing, through movement and nutrition. And so I saw what that did to my own life. And it's hard to pick so like one specific client because there's so many. And what I think actually the most amazing ones are, obviously I have girls in my app that drop, you know, 30 plus pounds, that you see the before and afters and they're like, I just feel better. Right. Which is huge to me. Cause like aesthetics are a huge part of it. We all want to like look good, but if you can feel good alongside that, that's amazing. So I love hearing those stories. But I find it pretty amazing the women that maybe aren't a part of my app that just follow me on Instagram that will slide in my DMs that are like, hey, like, you've taught me how to fuel well just on your Instagram through your recipes and like some of your workouts, things like that. And I've lost 30 pounds or I've, you know, my muscle mass has increased. And that's another thing too, is like a lot of my girls, when they can show me specifics from a body comp standpoint, not just weight, but being like, hey, I've increased my muscle mass and lowered my body fat. Like, that is our end goal. And that's honestly kind of like what I preach on, is like, you hear the word toned with women all the time. Really what that means is you're increasing your muscle mass, your lean muscle mass, and you're reducing that body fat. And that's going to create that toned look. But to get there, you got to eat and you got to lift.
I hate that word. I fucking hate the word toned.
So many women do. I mean, I kind of do too, but like, I give it grace.
I hear it and like every ounce of me cringes just for the fact that I'm like, I just want to be toned. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, that's like this weird, it's like, I want to be strong, but I want to be like, I'm just like, oh, pick one. And it's
that, I know I hate it too, but I also give it grace because that used to be me saying that. And I know so many women feel that way, but it's like they just don't have the education yet.
Yeah.
But like, girls, eat well and lift and trust your bodies in the process. And I promise you, you'll get that toned look, but you gotta obviously stay within that caloric threshold as well. But yeah, like being toned, it just is really about building that lean muscle mass and reducing body fat. So when I see stories like that come through of just like, I'm eating more than I ever have, and my weight has gone down and my muscle mass has gone up and my body fat has gone down 10%. Like, those are freaking incredible stories. Like, those are the ones that I'm like, this is why I do what I do every single day. And it's just what keeps me going.
It's awesome. So looking ahead, what's the bigger vision for Sam C. Fit? Like, where do you see this mission going in like the next 5 years?
Oh, well, I'm working on some things that I can't share yet, but some really cool business opportunities that will provide even more tools for women to help fuel better. And just find that inner babe and bring it out, truly. I'm an entrepreneur at heart, so I really want to build an empire and help women seriously be the strongest versions of themselves. So that's my goal. Hopefully some exciting things to come.
It's awesome. That's my 10 questions. I mean,
I love it.
Yeah. No,
those are great.
Yeah. No, I'm, you hit it out the park. It's, you know, it's always fun to do podcasts with people that do podcasts because they understand about like give and take and how to like bring personality. Cause I've had some people on that necessarily weren't skilled podcasters and they just like answer questions.
I feel that. I've been there.
I
kind of like act, I view it as a conversation. Like, you want to ask the questions back or like keep it conversational. That's what it's about.
I had Braden Smith, who's an NFL player who went through a really harrowing deal. He ended up developing something called religious fervor, which was like a religious OCD, where in his mind he was imagining that like every movement, everything he was doing was like somehow being viewed by God. Like, oh, you didn't tape your fingers correctly. If you don't tape your fingers correctly, God's going to strike you and your family down. Like the amount,
oh my gosh,
like terrible, like crippling. And so he ended up going into a treatment center, an NFL year last year, and they, you know, were putting him through this. And then he went down to Mexico and did ibogaine therapy, and ended up kind of like clearing it all out and kind of fixing himself.
Wow.
So I saw it pop up, and we have mutual friends. So Will Fries, who played next to him, who played guard, we worked, he came out and trained with me for a bunch of months, and then now he's in Minnesota. So he put us in touch. And so we had him on the podcast, and you could tell he probably hadn't been on a lot of podcasts because I asked him a question and it was like two word responses. And I remember we were about 20 minutes in and I'd like hammered all 10 of my questions. And I was like, oh man, I got to figure this thing out.
What do we do now?
Yeah. So then we started talking about his treatment, at which point he opened up. And I always have to remember that when you're, you know, interviewing somebody or having somebody on the podcast, you know, there's a certain amount of information that I want, right, that I think is interesting. But at the end of the day, the person wants to talk about what they're interested in and what they're passionate about. And for you, it's very
balanced.
Yeah. For you, it was very easy in that, you've built an incredible community, you know, like looking through your social and like the website and everything, it's all like branded very well, very aesthetically pleasing.
Thank you.
It puts you forward. I think the message, the mission is very clear and you're impacting a lot of people. And I think you're doing great things, and I'm stoked that you came on Power Through Radio.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm just trying to spread the good news and help women. So thank you for allowing me to do so. It was really nice to meet you.
Yeah, obviously, pleasure to meet you too.
Heard so much about you. So this is an honor. I'm really grateful for it.
Awesome. Well, that's an honor to have you on. And yeah, thanks for tuning in. Another episode of Power Athlete Radio.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See you.